Hi everyone, this is Pinchas. I'd like to share some thoughts on topics which I think are important. I hope you'll find this helpful and maybe even inspiring. So here goes. There are some people who take a long, broad look at life ahead of them and make for themselves big, lofty goals, and lo and behold, step by step, they go ahead and they achieve their goals. One thing falls into place after another and, you know, they build up over time, but it works. And before you know it, they're tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. They acquired vast knowledge and everyone's coming to them with questions. Or for others, they built empires, they built yeshivas, they built chesed organizations, they founded schools, you name it. And they helped so many people. They changed the way things run, the way things are done for the better, of course. It's absolutely beautiful, amazing. They're just a success story. You know such people? Yes, I know that these people are out there, but it's not like that for everyone. For many of us, it doesn't really go that way. We're struggling to get by. We're plodding through our life, each with our own challenges, either working in an office, trying to cover our bills, on one side of life, and on the other side, we're trying to get along with clients, colleagues, managers, the rest of the chevra, or we're chasing after people to give us business, to give us recognition, acknowledge that we exist, or we have other struggles, each in our own way. And the bottom line is most of our physical energy, our emotional energy, is spent just on getting by, just on getting through the day, getting through the week. And who has time to think out of that, to see out of that, to focus on actualizing our potential, focus on leaving an impression, a meaningful impression on the world, and making a true difference. It sort of gets not even lost in the shuffle. It's like we can't even like almost think about that. We can't, like, you know, maybe here and there, you know, that dream pops up again, and that feeling of yearning overtakes us. But before long, you know, reality kicks in, and we're like, you know, back into the grind. And the truth is, we often become numb to this. We almost forget that there's something inside us that's yearning for more, and that deep inside our soul, our neshama, something's crying. And sometimes what happens is that we start to rechannel our aspirations. For many people, especially in the business world, that starts meaning to make money, and, you know, it becomes almost a goal within and of itself. And I actually once read in this business book, and I don't think this is the only example, I think this comes up all the time, but this is just an example that I personally came across that I recall. I'm sure there was many more, but basically this business book was describing an approach to business, basically emphasizing the idea that you have to think out of the box, you know, do the new thing, break the mold, you know, all that jazz. So I'm sure many of you heard these concepts, and I know we're all trying, all of us in business at least, are trying to figure out somehow how to think out of the box and come up with something that all the other out-of-the-box thinkers haven't come up with yet. But, you know, that's the struggle. Anyhow, so this book brought this actual supposedly real-life story to illustrate that particular approach of business, and describes how a fellow, I think in the 1800s actually, you know, somehow all these stories are from the 1800s, and this guy was in England, and he was an out-of-the-box thinker. He rethought the business model of his line, and he ended up being very successful. He went from being from this poor kid to a big, rich tycoon. Rags to riches, success story, beautiful story. Anyhow, how did they describe the punchline of the story? Basically, it says how this fellow died being worth millions of dollars, actually pounds. It was in England. But that's sort of the, you know, the clincher or the pinnacle of a success, that how much money he was worth, quote-unquote, when he died. And logically speaking, obviously, that makes no sense. What benefit does a person have from dying with a lot of money? And don't tell me in order to leave it over to his inheritors. You know, that's not usually the reason people work so hard to make money. I'm not downplaying the idea of leaving money for your children, but I think you get my point. Anyhow, so that was the way it expressed it. You might say I shouldn't pick on this author's words. It's not the way he meant it. It's just a way of bringing out that the business model is successful. And I'm not really arguing that completely. But I do think the fact that it was expressed that way, I think that shows a little bit of, maybe you might call it a Freudian slip. It shows maybe subconscious mentality. It shows that there's a certain mentality out there, and that is that people look at making money as an achievement of in and of itself. You know, l'shma, and that becomes a real life goal. And you know, obviously, if you take it apart logically, it doesn't really make so much sense. There is no real achievement in making money in and of itself. It's an end to a means. It's a means to an end. And not playing downplaying the fact that we need money. It's the way the world works, and we can do a lot of good things with money. But if it becomes an end into itself, that means we lost focus. You know, and you see this sometimes. You see people who are investing so much years of work and I guess money and just so much. They're like almost investing their lives in their financial success and in sorry to say it so bluntly, but showing off their financial success. And I think it's not only about showing off, which is it's its own discussion, but it's a lot of it. It's like this feeling that like this is how I made it, this is how I arrived, this is how like I achieved in life. It gives you this artificial sense of achievement, and that's what I'm talking about over here. This is really a rechanneling of your real innate desire for real achievement, of real growth, of really fulfilling your true potential, your neshama's potential. And it's not always with money. You know, with other people, it could be recognition. Sometimes it's both money and recognition. And again, don't get me wrong, a certain amount of recognition is important. Just carving out your space in the world. You know, we know the story of Chayin HaMagal. He always slept for 7 years, and then when he woke up, no one recognized him. The Gemara says over there, Oy chavrusa ay misusa, which Rashi explains that it means a person needs that basic respect. You need to be recognized as the person that you are. And you need to live, and there's nothing to be embarrassed about that. I mean, if Chayin HaMagal needed it, then we can certainly appreciate that we need it. But sometimes it becomes, it graduates from being, you know, just a basic need to something you become obsessed with. Your whole life becomes a constant hunger and chase after recognition, sometimes consciously, sometimes subconsciously, sometimes both. And you're always looking to move up, to hear that little compliment, or just even seeing in the person's eye that admiration or jealousy. Yes, jealousy. We like, whether we admit it or not, we like when people give us that jealous look, gives us that kick, or hearing in that tone of voice. Again, either the admiration or the jealousy, that like, oh wow, you know. And you know, that's what gives us a kick. But sometimes it's more than just giving us a kick. Sometimes it's almost the reason it becomes almost the reason that we live for. So again, at this point, it moved up from being a need to becoming a rechanneling. You know, you sort of lost focus of what you're really here for, and this becomes a goal into itself. And sometimes this could be even in ruchnius things. It could be, position in whatever it is in ruchnius, and the position itself. The what you're doing, the shtela that you have itself, can be beautiful, but sometimes there is a shalei lishma there that consumes you, it takes you over, and you lose focus of what it's about, and it's more about, you know, who I am, what's my position, and how I'm looked at in society. And again, I don't want to limit it to that. It's definitely out there in the secular, mundane world, you know, when it comes to positions in a job, when it comes to positions in society, when it comes to your place in shul, when it comes to your place in the social circle, whatever it is for every person. But the point is, again, that we let this thing consume us. We let this thing take over our life. And I don't want to focus so much on the distraction itself. I want to focus more on the fact that it's really taking over that real hunger, that legitimate hunger that we sort of forgot about. So here's the question. Is there a better way? Is it somehow still possible to realize our full potential, which is the awesome unique koyches Hashem gave each and every one of us as an individual, even as we're just grinding through our daily existence, just plodding through life? Is there a way that we could actually achieve a level of true godless, true greatness, and really accomplish the full tafkid that we have here in this world? So when you think about it, what can we do? Most of us can't afford to give up our jobs. We can't abandon society and go live in a hut in the forest or a cave in the mountain and just focus on spirituality. For most of us, radically changing our lifestyle is not really such a realistic option. And you have these people who made radical changes, and you know, there are these inspiring stories out there who people who literally turned their lives around, and they were going through these exact grinds. The Alter von Havardik famously was literally supporting his family and his mother-in-law with all the children, and he was a very successful and aggressive businessman. I don't know, not so many people know about this, but that was how he started out as a young man. And there came a point in his life where he literally turned his life around and he secluded himself. He completely abandoned business and lived completely on Betachin and became the Altif and the Vardik. And it's not the only story. There are other stories out there. And these stories are very inspiring and they're beautiful. But again, it doesn't usually happen. So if you think that this is something you can do, you see yourself doing, you know, maybe speak to a guide, to a Rebbe, to a mentor. But if it's within striking range, go for it. But in many cases, probably in most cases, it's just not going to happen. Even if theoretically maybe it's possible, it's just that's not the option that's going to be happening. So let's see if there's something else that might be our real greatness. That might be really the tafka that Hashem wants from us, you know? Hashem doesn't want the same thing from everyone. It doesn't have to be one right answer. We don't have to follow the same model. So what's a path that many of us can choose to really actualize our potential? I'll say over a story with the Chafetz Chaim, told over Reb Yankel Galinsky, that there was a young man who had learned in the Chafetz Chaim's yeshiva as a bacher, as a young man, before he got married. And the Chafetz Chaim had yeshiva in Radin, in Poland, or Lithuania, or Russia, whatever, depending on the border of how the borders were that day. But anyhow, this little town called Radin had a famous yeshiva led by the Chafetz Chaim. This young man had learned there, and eventually he got married, he left the yeshiva, he started going into business. And as business progressed, he slowly began learning less and less, until he was basically learning nothing. He was very, very involved in his business. It was consuming his whole day, his whole life, and sort of didn't leave much room for anything else. One day, he meets up again with his former Rosh Yeshiva, Chafetz Chaim, and Chafetz Chaim starts, you know, talking and asking him, how you're doing, how's the family, and before long, he gets down to business and asks him that big question. He says, how's learning going? And the man turns red. He admits that he's not really learning. And maybe to save face, or maybe just to say the truth, he turns to Chafetz Chaim and he sort of goes on the offensive. And he says, you know, it's really Reb Naftali's fault. So who's Reb Naftali? Reb Naftali Trapp was really the one who was the acting Rosh Yeshiva in the Chafetz Chaim Yeshiva. Chafetz Chaim himself didn't really have an active role in it, even though he owned the Yeshiva and he had, you know, he spoke to the Bachrim. I don't know exactly the breakdown, but the Reb Naftali Trapp, known as the Granat, he was the one who actually, taught the Shir. So this young man says it's all Reb Naftali's fault that he doesn't learn anymore. What's that supposed to mean? So he explains like this. He says, you know, when I was in yeshiva, I learned what learning really means, learning Torah really means. Reb Naftali taught us, you know, on a real high level, the full glory and richness of learning, of going into the depths of a sugya, of understanding on a really high level, taking apart the back and forth of Gemara, Rishonim, Achronim. And I got an appreciation of what Torah is supposed to look like. And now, you know, maybe I could squeeze in 20 minutes here, half hour there, 5 minutes there, or even an hour, you know, once a week. But it's not, I sort of know that I'm never going to get to that level of learning that I had when I was in yeshiva in Radin. So I feel like there's no use, you know, there's no point. I'm never going to really accomplish real learning. And since I was exposed to the real level of learning, I can't go down from there. And basically that means I'm left with nothing. So I think the cry of that young man is really the cry of so many. So many of us have been exposed to real greatness in Torah, in other areas of serving Hashem. And when we're just plodding around our mundane lives, we sort of get this feeling that there's no way that we can really get to that. It's hopeless to really get to the true level that we would consider being great. So we completely throw in the towel. But even if we don't, we sort of, you know, we lose that chashivas for that which we do. It's like, okay, you know, let's just do something to be yaitza, but obviously, when that's the attitude, it's going to look different. You know, davening, the learning that we do, the mitzvahs that we do, it's all like, okay, you know, I'm a from yid, so like, you know, I can't just not daven, I can't just not learn. But we don't see any real, we lose that neshama, we lose that fire that comes when you feel like this, I can really get places. Okay, so this is the problem, and I think you might have guessed by now which direction we're heading. The general idea that I want to touch on now is probably not so new to most of you, but maybe to some of you it is new, and also I just wanted to focus on a little bit more and maybe also discuss the practical aspect of it, not just a vague concept, and also maybe some practical steps how to achieve these goals. So I'm sure you've heard the general concept that we each, meaning each and every one of us, we each have our own unique and special mission, our special tafkid entrusted to us by Hashem. And this mission is something that no one, and that means absolutely no one else, can do instead of us. That mission is very different for every person. So it's not about setting up for ourselves this image of someone else's success and saying to ourselves subconsciously, that's something I'll never get to. Rather, it's about recognizing our specific abilities, which sometimes are not immediately apparent, even to us, and also the opportunities that we have within our current real situation, whatever that might be. And that's what we need to work with and maximize that. And that kind of achievement will not always be so shiny and glittery. I might not get our picture in the Gedolim section of the newspapers. I might not get us a biography by Art Scroll after 120. But that's what Hashem will be looking at when we come up to Him at the end of our lives. As the Rebbe Reb Zisha famously said, they won't, in Yiddish he said, or at least that's how they say it over, it's Mevet mich nishmas and fanish zan meilich, Mevet mich shmas and fanish zan zisha. They won't punish me, they won't hit me, for not being Meilich, his brother, the Rebbe of Meilich, but they will punish me, they will hit me for not being Zisha. In other words, obviously, it's said in a little bit of a negative context of punishing, but he didn't mean to be negative about it, but he meant to bring out that I won't be held liable, I won't be held responsible for not being someone else, but I will be held liable if I don't become who I can become. So on a more practical level, at this point, I don't want to go into every detail in depth, hopefully in the coming episodes, but for now, I just want to discuss some general ideas where we can grow ourselves. And these are mainly things that are already built into our schedules. They're things and concepts we're already involved in some form. So for many of us, these levels are within reach if only we're willing to put in the effort. And each and every one of us in our own way can build on them or on other similar missions and expand them and really discover their unique potential in a way that they may never have thought possible. So we'll start with a few examples, just a tip of the iceberg. We'll start with some of the more obvious ones. Number one, human relations. Let's talk about humility and chesed, kindness, for those of us who are in business or even not in business, just existing among people. If you don't live in a cave or in the desert, then this is an issue for you, whether you focus on it or not, and whether you ever thought about it or not. Back to the Chafetz Chaim. There's a well-known saying of his that a storekeeper, let's say a grocery store owner, can be engaged in one long act of chesed his or her whole life, or they can be a simple, selfish nobody. What determines that? What determines that is the storekeeper's attitude. What does that mean? If the storekeeper approaches his business with the gisha, the attitude that he wants to help the community, he wants to provide their grocery needs, he wants the old ladies to have ready-made challah for Shabbos, he wants the little children to have milk, he wants the kinloch to get some candy, and so on. And to him, that's what he's doing. That's his real business. But, you know, you have to make a living, so he charges. He makes his profits so his family can live, so he can manage. But what's he really doing? He's really doing chesed, and that's the real truth. On the other hand, if he really isn't it for the money only, And all his claims of looking to help, which today is very in vogue, companies and marketing in general use these type of lines, giving back to the community, nice fluffy platitudes. They write into ads or hang it up on signs or say it in their customer service. But really, you know, that's not the truth. It's really just about the bottom line. Just getting the cash register to ring, well, you know, you can't complain about that. But ultimately, is that doing chesed? Not really. And this is not only, well, it's about the attitude in your mind, but it in many ways, it'll probably drive what you do in certain scenarios. You know, what's going to happen when someone can't pay their bill? You know, how quick are you going to be to suspend their account? You know, if you find out that there's a family, local family that, you know, lost a parent, Leilenu, are you going to be understanding of that? Or are you going to say, you know, you got to pay or that's it, or you're out? You know, are you going to cut people some slack? That's not the only example. Sometimes you just go out of your way to help people. You go the extra mile. You know, you have something delivered when you didn't have to, you know, for free. You come out of so many ways. But the point is that it's in your head, but it can also be reflected in your actions. You could be in the same business, and it'll be run in a way that you're really doing chesed, and just the business is just what you need to get by. Or it could be the other way around, that, you know, the whole focus of your business is the mundane aspect, you know, the making money. And even if you do end up doing some nice things, it's maybe few and far in between, or maybe even that is not really for the sake of doing kindness, but for the sake of using that as a marketing tool. And this is an illustration of chesed, but that's not the only thing. There's other human relations. There's the concept of making a kiddush Hashem. There's overcoming jealousy. There's bitachin, and that's a real big yamud and bitachin. There's so much to discuss and so much to grow. And it could be, you know, the difference between a giant and a midget. And there's a whole world out there. And to reiterate, I'm sure many of you heard these concepts. Most of you heard these concepts. So I'm not looking just to tell again what you already know, even though reminders have their value too. But mainly I want to offer practical steps, relatable, implementable tools and approaches that can not only grow our appreciation of the values we mentioned, but it can also give us some sort of roadmap, b'siyata d'shmaya, to get there. So much for now.